This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Tech Talk, this is Frida Liu. Every once in a while, we let Culture Pop's Matt Armitage indulge himself with a little pontificating. This week, we're heading back to the future, his favourite place, to see if some of the world's greatest theorists agree with our bespectacled futurologist. That's what he's calling himself. So usually, it's also crystal ball time when there's not much tech news.
Hi, Frida. Yes, that is true, but not in this case. The New Scientist had a 2076 special last week to celebrate its 60th birthday. They decided to look 60 years into the future. So I thought, you know, they've got access to a few more minds than I do. So I wanted to see how their predictions kind of compare to mine. So just to start off with, I thought we'd have a story from the future, or sounds like it's from the future, that's actually with us today, which is making animal feed from natural gas. Now, I know that sounds very weird. There's a company called Calista in California. What they're doing is they're breaking down the microbes in methane, and they're using that to create a high-protein feed for animals. So what happens is the bacteria is dried in vats, and then it's processed into feed pellets. Now, it's already been approved by the US FDA for fish and for livestock, but the company involved is actually aiming to make this for human beings. So we could all be eating gas food fairly soon. The process is actually very old. It actually predates photosynthesis. So it's one of the earliest forms of food energy known on the planet. There are sort of certain drawbacks, but not sure where we'll go
so
from there.
So is using fossil fuel as food ecologically sound?
Well, it's one of those yes and no questions. I mean, yes, it reduces land mass because it reduces the land mass to feed animals and people, but it could actually increase our carbon dioxide emissions. What they're thinking of is that it could be used for things like long-term space exploration and colonization, because they need ways of making food on the go. One of the drawbacks of doing this, obviously, is that you're taking methane and you're giving it to animals, which produce methane.
Yeah,
so there's a bit of an unvirtuous cycle going on here.
Right.
But of course, the most important thing is, what does it taste like? Early taste tests suggest that the pellets actually just taste like you've left the gas on.
Okay, now if the future already seems to be here, how can we have any idea what the real future will look like?
Well, one of the things that New Scientist points out is that predicting the future is basically a waste of time. We can have a kernel of an idea. So, for example, we know that people thought of things like, you know, the internet and smartphones back in the 1940s or 50s, but the reality of it is very, very different. And one thing we've seen is this kind of increasing complexity of the technology, and that makes the process of predicting the future even more difficult. So, for example, you know, we talked about the idea of post-humans and artificial intelligence. So there could be a point where we have this kind of tipping point, this singularity, which is where we will reach a point where we are introducing a new and more intelligent species to ourselves. And people are thinking that could be, you know, around the point of 2045. So it's all a little bit sort of difficult and up in the air.
All right. So is this tipping point, the singularity, a certainty?
No, obviously. If it was, then we would be worshipping Nostradamus as a god. We're not. So there's a lot of it is to do with complexity and chance, because a computer cannot predict the future any more than you or I can. So this idea of intelligence, it's not as simple as adding more power and more processing. When you look at human intelligence, it's evolved over millennia. Part of it comes from our experience. It comes from our history. When you look at a machine and you're giving a machine data, you have to ask yourself, you know, can it learn context? Of course, these machines can all be linked together. They can start to learn and share context. But it's going to be a long time, I think, before the machines have the kind of experience that we've developed through thousands of years of just being wrong.
Right. And I always end up asking you this. Should we be scared?
Well, yes. There's always the fear element when I come on for stuff like this, isn't there? Yes, because, I mean, especially when you look at, you know, the election of people like Donald Trump at the moment, battle robots, for example, are going to make war very cheap in human terms. So a country that's very rich and can afford an army of robots, it's going to be very easy for them to go in and dominate someone who can only throw human beings at these pieces of metal that are slicing them up. We also have to look at the jobs that are going to get replaced, whether it's taxi drivers, lorry drivers, robots doing a lot of the work. So there is the issue that social inequality could increase if we don't address a lot of these issues. So it's one of those things, if we get it right, we're going to improve society, we'll have health, wealth, happiness, all of those fun things. If we get it wrong, then, you know, it's going to be time to call John Connor because Arnie's coming to kill you.
Okay, let's get back to the happier and safer zone of our old friend, 3D printing. Will 2076 be a print-out world?
Yes, exactly. I actually missed this this book. I'm kicking myself for doing it. It has the snappy title of Zero Marginal Cost Society, but it's actually a bit more interesting than it sounds, by a guy called Jeremy Rifkin in 2014. Now, he had used a great example that hadn't occurred to me. When we look at the music and the publishing industry, we've seen how the internet has made the production and the distribution of music and books very, very cheap. Mm. But it's also made piracy very easy, and it's also destroyed some of the value of that content. So we've actually seen a decrease in profits in that sector. So by 2076... it's quite possible that there will be a zero marginal cost of producing additional units of almost everything. So we could be in this situation where pretty much everything is free for us to use. And of course, 3D printers are going to be a big part of that process. But we might be moving beyond 3D printers by 2076. We might actually be looking at molecular assemblers. So we're not looking at machines that are full of raw materials that are putting all these things together. We're looking at machines that actually do it on a cellular, on a molecular level, and create the raw materials to make the product. So essentially, we would have exactly what they had in Star Trek, a replicator. You press a button, and anything you want springs into existence.
Okay, now last week we talked about post-humans and cyborgs, and Jeff is an actual android, so he's safe. But will you and I still be alive in 2076?
I've got a feeling that we might be, actually, and there's a good chance that you're still going to be running marathons. I think when we looked at all this kind of post-human stuff last week, but it's quite possible that it's only going to be a stage. It could actually be a passing fad. There'll probably still be a subculture of these kind of extreme cyborg gothy type people, but they're just doing it for the fun of it. The next stage really is creating perfect people naturally. Now, we've talked about CRISPR, the gene editing tool, a few times. We haven't gone into how it works, because actually listening to Stephen Hawking is easier than figuring out how CRISPR actually changes DNA. But there's a pretty good chance that people will be naturally enhanced by 2076. So we will all be intelligent, we will all be athletic, we will always all be disease resistant, we'll all be beautiful. It actually sounds really dull.
A full head of hair.
No. Yes, and we won't wear glasses. I wonder who you're talking about. Anyway, the chances are that this is going to be something that's only going to be available to the very, very rich. So again, we will have this kind of two-tier society, in that we will have these kind of people essentially who will be mutants. I mean, when you look at films like the X-Men, the mutants had, you know, these superpowers, but they were kind of outcasts from society. I think we're going to have the opposite. The mutants are going to be the ones with the money. They'll be the ones who can change their genes. It's going to be the poor people who are going to be falling behind. So yeah, we could well have a master race created by money by 2076.
Right. How about climate change? Will we find ways to combat that in the next 60 years?
Well, I think so. I mean, we're going to have these kind of massive geoengineering projects. So we're going to have these huge machines, towers that will suck in, suck CO2 out of the atmosphere. We're also probably going to have to look at reforesting, you know, huge swaths of the planet to suck up some of that carbon dioxide. We're also looking at situations where we're going to have to be spraying reflective particles into the sky, similar to what we do now with cloud seeding. But these particles, we're going to use them to reflect the sun and to reduce the temperatures down on Earth.
All right. Now, can geoengineering solve our climate problems?
Well, yes and no again. It's going to create its own issues because there will be variations from the normal weather patterns that are created by this geoengineering. So, for example, in a country like Malaysia, we might find that the monsoons dry up because these particles in the air will actually make it more difficult for clouds to form and rain to fall. So climate will change in a lot of places still. The oceans will be colder, but countries in the northern hemisphere will still be hotter than they would have been before all of this. And of course, you might find that there will also be lobbying on the part of some countries to have their ideal climate. So countries might actually bid for the kind of climate that they want to have. So do they want to be a country that attracts tourists? You know, what kind of economy do they have? And of course, this is all only still temporary fixes. It's a bit like, you know, putting a Band-Aid on a hemophiliac. Yep. You know, it's still
all
sort of, it's still going to bleed underneath. So as soon as we stop spraying, as soon as we stop doing any of this CO2 clearing, the planet's just going to heat up again.
So you mentioned reforestation. So current forecasts seem to predict that the global population will continue to boom. So how can we reduce the livable landmass while the number of people are increasing?
Well, we're already at the point of peak child. A lot of people are forecasting. Now, the population may go up to 9 billion. It's unlikely to go any further than that. So by 2076... we'll probably see that the world population is in a long-term decline. So similar to the situation that we have in Japan and Singapore now. One of the big problems with that is that as soon as fewer fertile females are born, it's actually very hard to catch up on that. Whatever you do, you can't make new babies. But then, having said that, we've talked about, you know, gene-edited humans. We're going to be able to live a lot longer. Robots are going to be doing all of the hard work. So really, are we going to have to care? We can all just sit around moaning about the weather and jobs, you know, like old people do, and watching as 80-year-olds go past on skateboards.
Okay, lastly, we always seem to reach points of development where we think we're about to know everything there is to know in the entire universe. Will we be know-it-alls in 2076?
Well, we always think we're know-it-alls, but, you know, it's one of those lovely things. The more we know, the more we find out how little we actually know. So, you know, every time we unlock, you know, some door, we see a solution, it just becomes a doorway to, you know, a new mystery, a new set of facts that we don't know. So, again, you know, whatever gene editing, whatever AI enhancements that we have, we can still be sure that in 2076... we're still going to be on a path to discovery.
CulturePop.com's Matt Armitage will be joined by Jeff Sandu for Geek Squawk after this. Tech Talk BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.